Justin is a small-scale regenerative agriculturalist looking after a number of parcels of land in the southern highlands of Sydney. Inspired by hands-on experience and the no-till market gardening methodologies of the ever-inspiring Charles Dowding, Justin has set out on a hero's journey to bring nutrient-dense food to the community in a regenerative manner. Not only is his farm responsible for the growth of organic produce that goes on to nurture the bellies of beautiful human beings, but he's also on a mission to teach others and connect interns with their own parcels of land. Small-scale ag, as he explains, is the way forward for the future of our families and friends. Doubling as an educator, this farmer has his hands full, trying to ensure that the vision of regenerative food production scales. Land care, or land share, is key to this as Justin leverages an ever-growing network of people who know of his market gardening prowess and connects them with trainee duckfoot farmers. Justin's solarpunk narrative reminds us of just how logical the no-till regenerative farming approach is to the stewardship of our entire earth system. With little to no inputs, using bio-intensive methods on small-scale plots, he demonstrates regenerative connections between feeders and eaters, helping to restore balance to the biomes on which we rely upon. You can follow Justin's important work and follow his solarpunk story on the gram at duckfoot_farm, or find out more about his work at www.duckfootfarm.com. All right, how are you, Justin?
Yeah, good, man. I'm good. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm very happy to see your face today.
It's been a while.
It has been a while. It's been last time I saw you, I was standing on, I think it was like kind of like the pilot farm that you have, which is called Duckfoot Farm. Am I right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I think when you come down, I was probably about not even halfway through setting up. So, and that farm's almost there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was really cool to actually be there when it was still being set up, because I mean, a lot of people, when they see farms, they think of a finished product, right? They think of all the lanes set up with all the food being grown. You're like, oh, that's cool. But to see it, like, you know, there were stacks of compost and you had stacks of cardboard getting ready to lay down and you were still sort of sorting out irrigation. And it was really cool. It was like, oh, wow. You know, as someone who's keen on a good project, it was fun to see that stage of the development.
Yeah, well, there's certainly a lot that goes into it. And, you know, I'm not really that good at making a grand plan and looking ahead. I sort of just, you know, go with an idea and evolve it over time. And it's turned out really well. So
Awesome. Well, I mean, that's kind of the nature of projects anyway, right? Like, if you have a major, if you have a master plan, you often find that you spend a lot of time on a master plan. And then when you actually get to implementation, that a lot of that master plan goes out the window anyway, because you've got to iterate every time an issue comes up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So,
I imagine there were plenty of those coming up.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still learning every day. My ideas and thoughts and the things I learn are changing all the time. So, and you just got to be open to that and accept that you don't know everything. And just constantly evolve, and that's working out really well. So I've just started my second farm, which is where I'm at now. So the first half acre is pretty much all set up, just a few little bits to tweak, like irrigation and so on. But this farm where I'm at now in Exeter is just under construction.
Wow. And would you say that you've learned on some of the either mistakes or issues that popped up on the first farm, and that it's been sort of quicker to develop the executor site?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, mad. That's cool.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm still doing courses. Yeah. So I basically consider the level that I'm at is still at the infancy stage. You know, I've got so much to learn, but that's part of what this is all about. It's about learning all these lessons and being able to show other people what I've done and the mistakes that I've made and the successes that I've had, and hopefully sort of eliminate some of the mistakes from other people's process.
Yeah. You know, that's so cool, man. Like, you and I spoke about this off air the other day, that obviously most lessons, or a lot of the really valuable lessons, are learned from the mistakes, and engaging with like that process of having to problem solve to like get over a hurdle. And I always gravitate towards people who are very open with their mistakes, because that shows me that you're a real person and you're not kind of just, you know, if you're on social media, you're not just sort of showing all the good bits, because there are probably a trillion bad bits to every one good bit, right?
Maybe not that many, but
maybe not a trillion. That's a bit of over the top, but you get the idea. But
yeah, absolutely. I do learn through doing and making mistakes. And you could put me in a classroom all day and pump all this information into me, but it doesn't make any sense to me unless I'm actually doing it.
Yeah, in one ear and out the other, unless you're able to apply it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, just taking a step back for a second, you actually have a fair bit of farming experience. I know you're being very humble and saying, you know, you're in the infancy here and you're still doing courses, which is on one level very admirable to think that you're constantly learning, which I think is the best way to be, always be learning and open to new things. But you've had a lot of experience farming prior to setting up Duckfoot Farm. And one of the ways that I was introduced to you is my father-in-law and I, last year or the year before, God, it was a while ago now, we were kind of on this little journey to figure out where our food was coming from. So we came up to the Southern Highlands and we met Phil at Moonacres, who told us about you. And he said that you had worked on Moonacre Farm for a long time. He gave you, you know, amazing compliments in terms of your ability and you know, just how well you understand farming. Where did you start farming? Like, how did you get into this? And what was the experience you had before Duckfoot even became, you know, an idea in your head?
Yeah, well, I first started organic farming at Moonacres in 2006. And that just come about by chance. I was actually heading off overseas, but I just had an opportunity to do some work at Moonacres. And I ended up being there for 3 years, and it just, I started to appreciate where my food was coming from. Mm. That was sort of the beginning of it. I ended up leaving Moonacres in 2009 and went and traveled eventually, and met my wife in Japan and come back and started a landscaping business. I actually went back to Moonacres in, I think it was 2017, because I had a lot of respect for Phil and what he was trying to do at Moonacres, and I wanted to help Phil. So it wasn't so much about the organic farming side of things, but I just wanted to help Phil. And after a little while of being there, I did a soil biology course, and I actually had someone show me a legume with a nodule that's filled with nitrogen, and he explained that when there's a correct bacteria in the soil, that will make that nitrogen available to plants. And that just blew my mind. It just opened a whole new dimension for me. And I realized how cool soil is.
Yeah, it's so cool, man. Dirt is so cool.
It is so cool. And I've been pretty obsessed with it ever since.
Yeah, understandably so, man. What was that soil course you did that sort of kicked that off for you?
Oh, it was just a soil biology course at the Western Sydney University.
Right.
So it was only for a few days, but it was, some highly regarded scientists involved and regenerative farmers. And I just really enjoyed the course, because even these people that are well known in the industry admitted that, you know, we know nothing basically. And there's so much to learn, there's so many possibilities, and it's so interesting. And we just have a long way to go. And but all these people were in it for the right reasons. They're all trying to do really good things. So and the information was mind blowing, but it showed me that I was on the right track, even though I didn't understand most of it. But it showed me that I was on the right track in my thinking and in my appreciation for soil and nature. So, it was a really good experience. And yeah, like I said, I've just sort of been pretty obsessed with it ever since. And there's a lot of challenges in organic farming, in terms of weeds and erosion and profitability or viability, your physicality, all this stuff. There's so many challenges in organic farming, and I was trying really hard to find a way of producing vegetables on a pretty large scale without tilling the soil, and causing erosion, because soil is our most vital resource, and when it's washing away, it's pretty heartbreaking. So I was doing a lot of research and just trying to find a way on that scale, and it was next to impossible. There was lots of people trialing things, and but I couldn't come up with a system that really worked. Mm. But that's when I discovered Charles Dowding is a market garden in the UK. People like Richard Perkins and who were doing similar things, but Charles Dowding was a major influence for me.
I saw
how much produce he was producing on a small scale. He had no weeds. I was kind of sick of my life being all about weeding. and it's true. I didn't really have time to manage the farm because of all these ongoing jobs. And that was part of the real challenge I faced, that I couldn't be a manager. I was too busy, doing all the tactical work.
Mm.
I was out there doing the physical work, the weeding and setting irrigation, and I didn't have much time to plan. It just really struck a chord with me what Charles Dowding was doing. And so I had an opportunity. I met a lovely couple called Ian and Sandra, who have some property in Mossvale, and they just offered me some land.
So cool.
We stood up their house and we looked down at the paddocks, and they said, "Which paddock do you want?"
That's sort of just up that angular path that runs through the entrance. And I can imagine you standing back and looking down. And it was kind of like, am I right? You had like two choices. There was one closer to a fair bit of trees, and
I had four choices. They fenced their property into four sections.
Right.
Looking down, I ended up picking the site that has a gentle slope facing north, which is a pretty obvious choice. And it's only half an acre, but it's been a big job, because at the beginning I mostly used a wheelbarrow.
Yeah, all by hand, so, all by yourself. That was...
Yeah, so I moved about 80 cubic metres of compost, about 60 cubic metres of mulch.
And all the cardboard as well. You laid all the cardboard and stuff as well, didn't you?
So I laid cardboard under the whole lot. And then... built up my rows with compost, so about 15 centimeters of compost, and then the mulch pathways. So there's many reasons for doing this. So there's it's basically mulching the native soil. So I'm building up. I'm basically replicating what the forest floor does. The forest does. It's all building up. And so by doing that, I can plant straight into the compost, and I don't have to till the soil at all. So I don't have to destroy the soil structure, the biology, the micro and macroorganisms. They're all intact, and they're still there to thrive and let them do their thing.
Yeah.
The other benefit is I'm building organic matter. I'm introducing bacteria and fungus and all that sort of stuff. So I'm basically inoculating it with some good material.
Mm.
And then it gives me a platform so I can plant my seeds or my transplants directly into that compost.
Mm.
and then they find their way eventually through the cardboard. The cardboard breaks down, the roots end up going through to the soil, and so that means I'm eliminating any erosion, and I don't get any weeds.
Yeah, it's such a simple, like, what Charles Dowding kind of sounds like he did for you and for many people around the world has really opened people's eyes to the simplicity of gardening, if you will, or farming, or however you want to look at it. And, you know, 10 years ago, people thought you had to till everything. But now I really feel like the zeitgeist is flipping, where people are like, don't till, don't be silly. We've got to support the life. And everything that you just laid out there in terms of what you laid out on the farm builds life as well. So it's like twofold benefit, in the sense that less work, but also more benefit for the actual ecology of the farm. Everything gets fed and boosted naturally without synthetics, and you have half the work.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, and you're right about the simplicity. It is really simple. Mm. And once you lay down that foundation, I mean, the initial work is a lot. It's a lot of work.
Right, of course. Yes.
The capital is a lot.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's a pretty big investment. You're bringing in a lot of material initially. Mm. But it pays off. It really pays off. So, basically, you know, I don't have to do cover cropping. I barely have to weed. I don't have any inputs, you know, except for my first year, I've got to bring in some compost still just to keep topping up. Mm-hmm. So, but after, you know, a year of establishing yourself, it is really easy maintenance. It is so easy.
Yeah.
And it's really intensive. So I will plant spring onions, broccoli, carrots, you know, so that's a whole year of produce, one after another. So you pull one out, I cut the roots, so the roots stay in the ground at all times, replant, and then after 12 months or two or three crops, depending on what they are, how heavy feeders they are, just top it up with a couple of centimeters of compost, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's all I have to do all year. So the only inputs that I have is a truck with some compost.
Yeah.
I don't have any bags of plastics or nothing like that. So, And once you've built the garden beds, that's it. Once you've laid the cardboard and built up, you don't have to lay cardboard again. That's it. The foundation's built, and you just keep improving it all the time.
Yeah. One of the things I think about the no-dig method often, just in my own little patch in the backyard, and watching how it has evolved by using the no-dig method. And the another thing you see, from particularly with the cardboard, is you end up feeding worms. You get so many worms because the worms love the paper. And again, you know, you get this stacked benefit where the worms are then tunneling for you and creating that sort of hydrological map below the soil. So everything spreads easier in terms of nutrients and water runoff and all that sort of stuff, less erosion because they kind of follow the caves that the worms have burrowed out for you. And the more you think about it, like you said, there's a lot of work in the beginning, but the long-term investment pays for itself in a couple of seasons, I would imagine.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've only been there for 11 months. 11 months ago, it was a bare paddock.
Yeah.
And like I said, most of it I've done with a wheelbarrow. So it took a long time to build this farm.
Hmm.
You know, I'm pretty open about money. So it cost me $40,000 to initially set it up.
Right.
And that's ongoing. So that's including a van, a refrigerated van that cost me 10 grand.
Okay.
But I've already made that money back.
Really? You know, wow.
I've made that money back. And this is off a bit less than half an acre. So my second year in, I'm not going to be doing as many trials, and, you know, I've got the whole lot set up. I'm already going to be harvesting crops that I planted in autumn. So it's going to be a lot more than 40 grand over a year. It could be, you know, if you were just farming on half an acre with this method, and you're really intensive and focused on what what it is you're growing. I mean, things like broccoli and cabbages, you know, they take a long time to grow. They take up a big space. They take up lots of room in the crate, and you don't get that much money for them. So if you really focus on what you're growing on half an acre, you could turn over 70 grand.
Wow.
You know, you ask any farmer out there on half an acre, could you produce $70,000 worth of produce or product? They would laugh at you.
Yeah, right. And what is that about? Like, that is that because the mindset that, you know, generally speaking, obviously not everyone's like this, but the mindset that some of these farmers come from is more of an industrial mindset where they don't intercrop like you, like they don't practice that bio-intensive intercropping, you know, sort of have like loose models of succession where they're stacking on top of each other. Like, why is it that they laugh at that? Because to me, it makes sense if you're really thoughtful about the process and you know, you have a level of intensity in your gardening that you know, there's more potential for profit or growth. So why is it that they laugh at that?
Well, I don't know exactly, because I don't, you know, I'm not a wheat farmer. I'm not a cattle farmer. I'm not a broadacre farmer, but those types of farms are high input, high output on huge areas. So there's huge investments in terms of inputs. It costs a lot of money to run those kind of farms. And when there's high outputs, there's lots of competition. It's hard to get fair prices. So where I'm so much more intensive on a small area, I'm thinking about how much I'm getting per square foot, not how much I'm getting per hectare. The labor's down, so labor can be really expensive. So I don't have any labor. I will once I expand, and also I'm in a bit of a niche market. You know, I'm selling to people that are really interested in local, healthy, nutrient dense produce. Yeah. So I can charge a bit more, and I don't have a middleman. I'm selling direct to consumers. Mm. So I think sort of, you know, that covers quite a few points that,
yeah,
you know, it's
it's like, you know, just thinking mathematically for a second, it's about understanding the economies of scale, right? Like, from what I hear you saying, you know, the bigger a farm is, the more it costs, the more things that need to be tended to, which then translates to less ability to be bio-intensive like you are talking about, having to spend money on labor, huge amounts of synthetic input, which probably costs, you know, however many tens of thousands a year as well. So, you know, like, one of the things that's ringing for me with my interest in permaculture is there's this idea that, you know, you use small and slow solutions, and once you start thinking about things small scale, you find that there's more opportunity than if you went large scale and hard and fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a paradigm disruptor, because it's not until you do it you go, oh wow, I can be a lot more productive if I just downsize a bit.
Yeah. No, you're 100% there. When you focus on small scale first, I believe, and get it right.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many things to iron out, so many things you need to learn about, you know, productivity. Yeah. That if you go too hard, too fast, too big, then you're setting yourself up for failure. So when you start small, get it right, then, you know, then you can build from there. You got to be patient, but it's definitely the right way to do things, I think. So yeah. I started with the 20 rows, and then I put in another 12, and then by then I was sick of wheelbarrowing, but I I had more time to be trialing things and to work out, you know, okay, I need to protect this really good compost. What am I going to protect it with? The hay is not going to work, you know, maybe mushroom compost, and just trialing things as I went along. And then by the time I finished those 32 rows, things were starting to tick along. I could afford to get a machine in to help build the rest of the rows. And And from there, okay, I'll tweak my irrigation. I'll move my tanks over there so there's more flow. And now it's the farm's just set up and running like clockwork. It's just amazing. So even now in the middle of winter, I have every bed full of produce. There's about 19 different varieties there.
So, mate, I see the images and stuff that you post on Instagram of your farm, and it just looks like it's been running for years. You know, it looks like a very well-oiled machine, you know, to use an industrial analogy. It's a testament to what you've done, mate, because, you know, one of the things that I really like about you is you're passionate about small scale, like for reasons other than economies of scale that we've just previously talked about. You also find the idea of having small scale very attractive for broader societal reasons. And that's why it's such a testament to you, because you're showing that it can be done on this scale, very small. People now see and go, oh, this is actually achievable, attainable, and super important. So I'm wondering if you could speak to that, like, besides these economies of scale, besides, you know, wanting to avoid burnout because you've gone too hard and too fast and too big too early, why else is it important that we have small scale agriculture in your mind?
Well, a big part of what I'm doing is to demonstrate and promote the possibilities of small scale farming. I think small-scale farming is really important to have in local communities. At the moment, in the whole of the Southern Highlands, to get local produce that's grown organically, as far as I know, there's only two of us, and that's and that is Moonacres and me, which at the moment, I'm only growing on half an acre. So I'm very limited in how much produce I can grow right now. But on a broader scale, I just think modern agriculture is, you know, and when I say this, I don't mean to discredit or undervalue farmers, right? Because farmers are our heroes. They've been providing food for us forever. I'm not here to put shit on farmers because of the methods they're using. They've just been taught, they've been guided to use the methods that they are through generations from fertilized companies and, people that were farming before them. So, you know, these guys have been born into this. I'm not putting shit on them at all. But the fact of the matter is, it is damaging. Conventional agriculture is really damaging on the environment. We've lost way too much soil. We've poisoned waterways. We've made the soil. We've depleted soil of nutrients. We're becoming sick from it. There's so many illnesses out there that are caused from modern agriculture. Plus there's also the carbon side of things, you know, releasing carbon and not storing carbon and transport and, you know, burning fossil fuels with trucks and so on. And I mean, it's a pretty horrific process from the time the food gets to our fridge. So I think when you're farming on a small scale, you're more likely to use better land management practices because, right, like we're saying, we're starting small. So that's part of what this is all about, is better land management practices. So it's healthier for me as a farmer. I'm not being burnt out, like you said. It's healthy on the local environment, and also we're giving people the opportunity to eat healthy, nutrient dense food.
Tick. I mean, that ticks all the boxes, right?
Exactly. And in you know, I'm in the Southern Highlands and I can look around me now and just see, you know, hundreds of acres of cleared land with, I can see about 10 cows and one horse.
Yeah, right. Plenty of space for opportunity, right?
Yeah, there's so much space for opportunity. You know, and so, you know, when I see this, I see the opportunity. I see that there's mutually beneficial opportunities here. And that's between young farmers like me that cannot afford land.
Mm-hmm.
Land prices are just astronomical. Who can afford land these days? That's big companies or millionaires or people that have been inherited land or, you know, been born into the agricultural industry. So
yeah, pretty much.
So, you know, I just think there's an alternative that we can do right now, and that's through land sharing. Mm. And so we can have many small scale farms in the Southern Highlands or in any community, and not worry about competition. Mm. You know, I think it's important for us to educate the public and to give the public an opportunity to buy this food.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a big part of what Duckfoot Farm's about. It's about land management and demonstrating and promoting small-scale farm for potential farmers like me and land holders that have land just sitting there underutilized. They're not doing anything with it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. And that's why I'm so excited to have met you, because I know that's what you're all about and I know that's what you're trying to do. And like you, I feel that that's the logical path forward. You know, like you've spoken about a bunch of things that actually have nothing to do with the farming itself. You're talking about education, you know, you're talking about, well, obviously they have to do with farming, health and things like that. But also, you know, you touched on earlier the climate aspect and how when land is managed in the way it is through Duckfoot or through a Moon Acres or wherever, it actually increases and enhances the health of the environment. And you build, you know, you build capital, if you will, through healthy land, through healthy soil biology and healthy food that, you know, often gets turned back into compost and then added back. And there's, you know, I think at the moment that at the front and center of people's minds is, you know, we hear it all the time, the climate emergency, right? And this is honestly one of the most logical directions we should head, or we could head, if we're looking to, you know, address this climate issue, because I can only imagine the amount of carbon that your little half acre in the Southern Highlands sequesters is astronomical, comparatively speaking, when you look across the road. You know, so existing in this world of regenerative agriculture where you're regenerating the earth and the land is valuable beyond belief. Putting food aside, you know, what you're onto is essentially the ultimate carbon sink. So, I mean, I guess I'm wanting to draw on that to get your thoughts. Like, how do you feel that these small-scale sites can contribute to the climate issue that we face?
Mm, yeah, well, like you said, it is more intensive. So you can produce a lot more off a small area. So, and it's the same with regenerative farmers who farm animals, you know, pigs and ducks and quails and cattle and all that. You know, if you farm in a regenerative manner, you can actually produce more off less land.
Yeah.
So, and you don't need to cultivate and cause erosion and release carbon from soil. You're constantly storing it. So they're, you know, so that's pretty much for me what it's about. It's about producing more off less land. And not damaging the soil or the local environment. So you're not, there's no leaching of you know, nitrates or chemicals or whatever into waterways. So it's a flow-on effect. You know, when you're using those methods, it goes downstream and kills everything down there, which has an effect on climate change. So I think, it's just about producing more off less.
Yeah. And I think I've had some conversations with people in recent times, you know, this idea of producing, consuming, like some people get a bit anxious about like a consumer society and very capitalist driven. But one thing that's important to note, and I speak about with some of my friends who bring this up, is that, you know, let's picture an open paddock like you can see across the road with about 10 cows, and then we look at your site there. You know, in this circumstance, particularly, you know, talking about addressing climate issues, it is actually better to have more going on than just leaving a pasture to its own doings, because you're plugging in all of these plants on top of soil that has ability to store more, you know, nutrients and carbon, but the plants are also harvesting from the sky, right? So you've got this constant like straw like analogy that is bringing down, whereas it still happens across the road in the paddock, but not as quick, and doesn't have as much capacity to bring in and draw down. So that's incredibly empowering to think that all you really need to do is plant things to be able to straw the bad stuff out of, you know, not the bad stuff, the excess of what we have in the atmosphere out, you know. And I, when I say that to people, like, oh, I can just create that? Like, that's really simple. I could do that in my backyard. I could create a carbon sink. So when people hear about farms like yours, regenerative agricultural science like yours, it's incredibly empowering to think that they're a part of that as well. And that's what whenever I pull out my Ubi box, which I'd love to talk to you about in a moment, I'm very humbled by the amount of farms I see on this box, this little piece of paper that comes in the box, that are regeneratively farming, that are actually, whether they're consciously doing it, which I'm sure most of them are, or not, you know, they're addressing a climate issue while also ticking all those boxes we talked about in the past, you know, healthy food and helping to educate people and showing people that organic farming can be done. I don't know. That was a little bit of a side rant there, but I'm always really happy when I open up that box and think Duckfoot Farm produce is in there.
And if you have more small scale farms around the place, it may, I mean, it's a big ask, but it may take a little bit of pressure off the big ag companies, you know, hopefully. Not that they would want that.
Not that they would, but it must do, right? Like, obviously there's people in your community, and even in my community, however many hundreds of kilometers from where you are, that are benefiting from this, because they are taking pressure off big ag. But I'm not buying from big ag. I haven't done for a decade, because it all comes from small-scale agriculture like yours.
Yeah. And that's why Ubi is so good, because they buy from local farmers, who are trying to do the right thing, who every day are trying to improve their methods and grow nutrient dense foods, and then people have a connection with their farmers, and that's all part of the regenerative agriculture too. It's not just about the soil, it's about our lifestyles and about our personal health and well-being. So Ubi is a link there.
It regenerates the connection in the community. Like it generated a connection between you and I, because I saw on the people like, okay, where's this food coming from? So I came to see it. I mean, Ubi is incredible, really. I'd love to, you know, just out of curiosity, sit down and see what their analytics are like. You know, how many people are they reaching? How many connections have they made between these small scale sites, and really start to, I guess, calculate in a sense the impact they're having, both personally like this, and also towards climate issues and soil management practices and things like that. What has your experience been like with Ubi as one of those, as a farmer who has, you know, essentially access to this awesome distributor? Like, what's that relationship been like for you?
Well, for starters, I have a lot of respect for Murat, who was the director of UVI.
Mm-hmm.
He really cares about global issues, about the environment, and in particular farmers and the way people farm. That the food that he's delivering to people, he cares a lot. And we have many conversations, you know, about the processes of farming and all that. And, you know, we can talk like you and I for hours because we both care so much. So that was initially why I like Murat so much, but and UVI, what he does with UVI. But yeah, he also can buy a lot of produce from me from a small scale farm. It's really important that I have a connection like UVI. And he lets farmers dictate prices to an extent, of course.
Right.
So, you know, instead of the other way around where wholesalers will say, you know, I'm going to cut you short. This is what I'm paying you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, right. You know, otherwise, good luck.
Yeah.
And I've been involved with that process before. And basically I've had to make a decision where, some produce is we're better off for the farm, for the health of the farm, we're better off just mulching some produce back into the ground because of the money we're going to get for it is just not viable at all. Fire. I mean the harvesting, the delivering and all that, it just wasn't worth our time at all.
Mm-hmm.
So we just mulched it.
Wow.
Just used it as a cover crop. So, and that's a pretty harsh reality of you know the world that producers are in. You know, we're under the thumb, really. Mm. We don't have much alternative, and I think you know a company like UVI really gives you an opportunity to get fair prices. Fair prices for the produce, and that's you know I wish things weren't about money, but unfortunately, it is an important part of it. You know, another part of what I'm trying to do is to demonstrate that small scale farming is viable.
Yeah.
You know, that's actually you know, a really important part of it financially and physically and emotionally. Mm. And UVI has really helped kickstart my business because at the start, I didn't have that many customers, but I had UVI. Yeah, I've had lots of people that have had my produce connected through UVI contact me through Instagram and are very grateful for the food. And so, you know, it's creating that connection between farmers and the consumers, which is really important.
Yeah, incredibly valuable for you by the sounds of things for many different reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. And whenever there's any issues, you know, it's there's no confrontation. It's a discussion, and you know, if I make a mistake or they make a mistake, we can deal with it like humans. You know, there's no they're just really good to deal with.
Perfect. I mean, that's you want to be dealing with real people who are in it for the right reasons, right? And that's what it sounds like. Maybe, you know, they're in the game for those reasons. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I'd always get really nervous before calling up a wholesaler.
Really? Yeah. Oh, understandably so.
Because I knew I had a lot of produce to sell. Like, obviously, this is before I was at Duckfoot Farm. You know, would have a lot of produce to move, and you know, the wholesalers are pretty hard ball. You know, they don't muck around.
Yeah.
Because they're in that game every day. And I'd always be really nervous because I would bring up knowing that I'm not going to get enough money for the produce. That's, you know, for the amount of effort and money and time and all that's gone into it. So I'd be really nervous about it. But when I'm dealing with someone like UVI or people with my veg boxes or restaurants, or it's always a great experience. It's always a great interaction. And, you know, it makes this worthwhile.
That's so cool to hear, man. And, you know, I love blowing smoke up people's asses like that. Like, if there's a cool business out there with cool people running it, then I'm going to tell the world about them, because we need more of that. Like, you have seen the need for small-scale agriculture. We also need more people who have a mindset beyond making cash money to, you know, increase the chances of people making these connections between farms like you and just beautiful food. We need to tell the world about it. I mean, maybe, you know, on my end, and I'm sure you see it as well, like when they come into the city where I am, you know, they rock up in these awesome old Toyota Hiace and they're spray painted with beautiful artworks. And it's just some normal guy who gets out and he hands you a box. And it's that simple. And there's beauty in that simplicity. And you know, it kind of feels like a family run business, because it's not big and flashy and corporate feeling. It's just like, nah, we're here to get good food to your door at a reasonable rate. And we source it from people like yourself who are doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Ticks all the boxes.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And there's a huge market in Sydney, and, you know, I'm in a really good climate where I can grow beautiful food. And, you know, you got someone like Ubi who's that link, and they do it well. So, you know, we have a great relationship. It's really good.
Yeah. Look, mate, I want to talk about this model that you've developed, you know, this approach to getting small scale agriculture into the hands of many who are interested. But before we do that, there's been a couple of points so far that have rung out to me. You said, you know, you really appreciate Ubi because Murat, the director, is in it for the right reasons, and you want to help him. But you also said earlier on that you wanted to help Phil at Moonacres. And I visited Moonacre Farm, and it's huge. It's a big site. But I'm just curious to pick your brains there. Like, what was it about Moonacres that made you go back, and why did you want to help Phil in particular? Like, what's going on there?
Well, Phil's an amazing guy. He really is. He bought that property about 15 years ago. And has been 100% dedicated to that for the whole time. He's pretty much been all day, every day. You know, just putting everything he has into it, you know, taking lots of money, lots of time. And he just cares so much. He cares about future generations. You know, he cares about the land. You know, he gives people opportunities. He lets people like me come along and use my own intuition and my own ideas and to try and create something. And, you know, that's been at a detriment to him, letting people come along and try all new methods all the time, because a lot of them haven't worked.
Mm.
And it's cost him money and time and so on. But you know, he gives people the opportunity, and that's what I love about Phil. But he, something else I was going to say, but I just forgot it.
Well, I mean, when I hear you say those things, it sounds like he's a true educator in the sense. Like, I'm a primary school teacher, and I've got a degree in education. And when I hear that approach that he has, like allowing people into your own, you know, classroom, essentially into his laboratory, his farm, and allowing people to experiment and follow their intuitions like that is incredibly noble for many reasons. Because first of all, he didn't have to, right? Like, you know, he's just opening this space up so that, I guess, in a sense, he feels like he's partaking in people's development in understanding how to farm. And that's amazing. I mean, I sat down with him in a cafe, and he showed me a spreadsheet of how detailed and how intensive he's farming. Like, every minute comes down to a dollar for him, you know, like, or whatever it was. And you're right, like, that really rang true for me, is like, he really cares about this, and he's putting everything in it. Complete lifestyle change from him. He obviously was in Tokyo for how many years doing his thing, and then decided, nah, don't really want to do this anymore. Yeah, I can be super wealthy here, but that's not really what actually contributes to a better planet. Comes here, gets this land, and just turns it into the most beautiful spread, you know, and all those trees that he's planted, that is it a tea tree plantation he's got going on? And
yeah, there's a mix of hardwood and tea tree down there. Yeah.
You know, he's doing multiple things down there. And he was talking about the schools that he has come through. And I could just, I guess the reason why I'm just pressing on the Moonacre button here for a bit is because I feel like I sense in you that you really got like probably the best experience you could to start your own farm, because you had a mentor and a teacher. I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, the experience you had at Moonacres seems to have shaped your path forward in wanting to teach, you know, and wanting to help people develop and see them go off and do things. And that I feel like is what's coming through in this model that you're wanting to create. So let's talk about that for a second. When I came and saw you, you told me that you've got something big in the works and you have a plan for this. And one was to see if it's viable, but there was something else that you didn't expose to me. What is it that you're doing now and you're embarking on?
Yeah, so at the beginning, it was about land management and about demonstrating that small-scale farming can be viable. Like I said before, financially, physically, mentally, all these things is really important. And then once I had done that, then it's about promoting land sharing and then the educational side of it. So like we were saying before, there's so much land around here. I actually already have started to train and set connect potential farmers with land holders. So I've got a few people that have some land that are interested in this. And so now it comes down to training and education. So I've opened up a internship opportunity. So, and I just had another bloke called Sam who just completed 3 months of working with me. He'd been traveling around for months and months working at different I think he's been doing it for a couple of years at different organic places, woofing. A lot of organic farms are hard work. They're muddy and they're weedy and and all that. So when he came to my farm, he was blown away. He didn't see weed inside. All he saw was produce, and he fell in love with it instantly. So he committed to 3 months at Duckfoot Farm, and I showed him everything that I could in that time, from planting schedules to making soil mixes, you know, transplanting, also building beds from scratch, composting, setting up irrigation. So he finished his 3 month internship and we found him some land. We connected him with a landholder. And that relationship looks like it's booming. So I think today, actually, he's moving out there onto the property.
Wow. That's so cool.
So this guy who has this property, he runs pigs, ducks, chicken. He does eggs and quail. And he provides to Sydney and some of the best restaurants. So Sam already has a connection there to sell his produce. He's got accommodation and he's got water and he's just got an awesome landowner to grow with. So it's a beautiful relationship and so far so good. I mean, he's my first intern and managed to find him his opportunity. He really believes in this small scale farming and now he has the opportunity to go ahead and hopefully the training that I gave him at Duckfoot Farm has given him the confidence and the skills to make it happen. I think another important side of that is it's building a really positive relationship between us growers, us producers. I would love to see us. I'd love to see many small scale farms around, and we're all friends. You know, we don't need to compete on price and things like that. It's all about education. There's enough people around to buy produce. We don't need to compete. We need to work together and educate the public, encourage the public to buy off us, and show them why. Show them why they'd want to buy off us. And so I think it's a really, really positive model going on here. And hopefully we can see many more. So there's the internship opportunity. I'm also just about to launch a 2-week intensive course. So you come to the farm with me. I'll show you all the things I just mentioned, you know, about making a seed raising mix and planting seeds and planting schedules and irrigation, all that sort of stuff, run through the whole lot over 2 weeks. That's obviously comes at a cost. There'll be a fee for that, but I've got about 4 volunteers at the moment that are coming along, and they're just loving the experience. They love what's going on. So there's educating there, plus there's also going to be some workshops and some events. So I'll probably be teaming up with the What If Society, who is a local business. They do lots of catering and pickles and stuff like that, but they sell my produce as well in their boxes and at a local market store. So they're all about local and no waste and all that sort of stuff. So I'll probably be running events with them. Paddock to plate sort of stuff, we'll be harvesting the produce and going back and cooking it. So there's some real big opportunities here and an opportunity for lots of people to get involved.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing you say is you've become someone who is almost focused entirely on making the connections to people who have land at the moment.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, it's all about, land sharing. Like we're saying before, potential young farmers like myself don't have millions of dollars to buy land. There is lots of landholders around that have underutilized land. So I want to train people and connect them with landholders. So I've got 2 land sharing arrangements at the moment. So there's the original Duckfoot Farm in Mossvale. I have a beautiful relationship with Ian and Sandra. We get on really well. They absolutely love having this garden on their property. They're not charging me rent. They just love what it's all about. Plus I give them veggies, I give them veggies. So I'm also looking after their land. So the paddock that I'm on's, regenerating, I'm building it up, building the fertility. So they're over the moon. And then the second property is in Exeter, which I'm just starting now. So I've built 20 rows out here, and this time I use a bobcat, not a wheelbarrow.
Good man. Well done.
So I'm learning. And this property is with Rob and Peter, who just so generous that they saw the model that I built at Mossvale, and they fell in love with it. They saw how neat and tidy it is, and they're first time land owners, so they didn't really know what to do with the 20 acres that they have here. And this property was a market garden previously, so it was a little bit of a mess. It sort of abandoned, and it was a big job for them. So they called me, and I said, "Look, I can clean this up and maintain it, and build a 1-acre market garden here, and you'll get vegetables, and I'll look after your land." And they're over the moon about it. They're so happy about it. It's just a really positive relationship. It's a really good opportunity for landholders and potential farmers like me to have a mutually beneficial relationship.
And so if I'm hearing you right, like the real incentive here for people who already have the land or wanting to do something with the land is that it is managed correctly in a regenerative fashion, and that they get, a surplus of vegetable or, a portion of vegetables each week, and an awesome relationship with someone who's using the land productively. Like all three of those things just sound so good. And I mean, that in itself isn't rocket science, right? Like there is so much land out there that people, I'm sure, just stare at and go, what do I do with this?
Exactly.
And you're providing that for them. Like you're providing, like, well, here you go. This is what we can do. And also the layer of building another relationship with the farmer that has, you know, learnt under your tutelage and mentorship, which you're obviously very experienced and you know what you're doing and you've thought about this hard and long, you know, that's a no-brainer. That's a no-brainer for anyone who's got a bit of land is to use it in this way.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, it's amazing. It still amazes me when people turn up to the farm. And I get people turning up to the farm pretty much every day now.
Yeah. Wow.
So I have to set up a farm tour, I think. But
yeah.
But I'm amazed all the time when someone turns up and is just blown away by it. And to me, I'm like thinking, it's just a vegetable garden. You know?
But it's not, but, is it? Because they like we spoke about earlier, a lot of the perception of farms are ginormous wheat patches with tractors harvesting. So when you come across a small-scale farm like yours, which I think you'll agree is, relatively speaking, a new-ish concept in the world of farming.
It's pretty unique. People
are like, what?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so part of this training too is and connecting potential farmers to land holders. I actually want to do this training, this education, because if I'm going to connect people with landholders, I want to know that they're going to farm in a respectful manner.
Yeah,
they're going to do the right thing by the land. So basically, you know, I'm going to be ticking some boxes or crossing boxes when someone comes to me and spends 3 months with me and does a course.
Mm.
You know, they're pretty much got to be committed to regenerative land management practices and doing the right thing by the landholders in their land.
Yeah. So let's talk about that for a second, because I'm sure that people, you know, like myself, when I just saw your Instagram post, I noticed that you got interested people almost straight away. But for anyone who's listening to this right now, you know, as an educator yourself, what are the expectations that someone should have if they want to reach out to you and give this a crack? Like, what would you say to them right now? Like, if you're interested, this is kind of what I'm expecting, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a pretty big level of commitment. I think for me, when I started, it's, you know, I'm environmentally driven. I'm not driven by money. You know, there is that side of it where I need to prove that it is, you know, I need to demonstrate that it is viable financially, but I'm not driven by money. I'm driven by, you know, life, the real things that matter in life. And there needs to be a pretty high level of commitment to the environment and using regenerative methods. I mean, I guess I'm not really asking that much of people. It's just that they're committed to seeing it out. You know, because what we don't want to happen is people going to potential farmers going to landholders, making a big mess, and then leaving.
Right.
So I think they've got to be pretty committed to the model that I've built. I want the model that I built to be replicated or close to it, because it is using, you know, good land management practices. It's really neat and tidy. Mm. So when the landowners see the farm, they like what they see. It's aesthetically pleasing.
Right. You know? It's got to be neat and tidy to a degree, right? It can't just be a scrap heap.
It has to be neat and tidy. And when you're farming on a small scale, efficiency is key. And you know, part of efficiency is being neat and tidy, right?
Yeah, and just generally organized, both aesthetically but also productively. Yeah, that's just a byproduct of being organized, is it's neat.
Yeah. And you know, and I guess just having that basic morals and respect for, you know, understanding that it's it isn't your land and you can be kicked off. I mean, obviously there's going to be a land sharing agreement between the landholder and the farmer, but you know, it's important that you respect the land and respect that it is someone else's land, and just do the right thing, and it pays back tenfold. You know, you do the right thing and people are generous.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's pretty just basic human stuff. You know, just be respectful.
Be respectful. Make sure that you're not walking into someone else's home and creating a mess. And look to be supporting a mutual relationship. When you mentioned that there would be like a landholder agreement, if someone isn't a farmer and they think, oh, I've got a bunch of land, and they're hearing this podcast and they want to contact you, what is expected of them? Like, what would you say to them? Like, okay, if you're gonna commit to this is what we kind of need from you as well. What would you say to them?
Yeah, well, you know, when it is your land and you've been living there for a while, you're going to have to accept that there's going to be some activity, right? There's going to be someone there all the time. And, you know, on the farms that I've said, there's people turning up every day just about to come and see the farm. So, so there's going to be activity on your property. And you sort of need to let go a little bit, I guess. Of that ownership and realize that you're agreeing to sharing the land.
Right.
Just be supportive of this localized food movement. I mean, it's going to be a really positive thing for the land holders to have on their property, but
I feel like I kind of know you pretty well now, and I know that you're not interested in money, and you're not really necessarily interested in these like high level written contractual agreements, and I would imagine that the type of people that gravitate towards this type of endeavor are already of similar mind, and you might not even need to develop some high level contractual agreement with lawyers and things like that to ensure that things don't go wrong, because you're just gonna, the right people are gonna contact you, and you're gonna only create relationships with people who have these morals and these ethics. So you're right, it's very human, isn't it? It's just like, let's just be respectful of one another and realize that what we're all onto here is something good.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's the way I like to work, but I do accept that things can go wrong and people can disagree with each other. And, so there needs to be a little bit of flexibility from both sides. You know, if a landholder comes down to me and says, they're not too happy about, where I put the compost bays or something like that, then don't react. Just think about it and think, okay, and there's an opportunity to do something different here. And, there's a balance, but I think it is important to be pretty clear and to make an agreement, and it may be legally binding, or it may just be, you come up with an agreement between each other and you file it away. And keep it between yourself. It doesn't need to go to lawyers, but it is there. It's been documented. So if something does go wrong, then it can go down that path. But hopefully it doesn't. At the moment, my agreement here, I mean, it's a big commitment. It's a big financial commitment. And that's what's scary about, I put in $40,000 and then all of a sudden they don't want me there anymore. So that's a pretty scary thought. So the agreement that I have with one of them is that for the first year, if they decide to sell, that I will get the full reimbursement of my financial input.
Yeah.
and then a depreciation over 3 years. And then once we get to 3 years, I've made my money back, maybe probably more. I've made an income, and then from then on, it's just basically, you know, if they sell the property, then it's on me.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what I need to accept as a, you know, as a land sharer, as, you know, this position that I'm in, it's not my land. So this is a possibility. This could happen. And then that's why I've got to work smart. You know, I've got to be respectful, look after land, build good relationships with them.
Mm.
And hopefully that doesn't happen. If it does, then I've farmed in a way that I've made my money back and I can move on.
Yeah.
You know, that's the hard reality of it. I don't own the land, and that's always going to be a possibility.
Yeah. And that consideration comes with, you know, the commitment that people would make, whether you're someone who's offering some land to be shared or a potential farmer of that land. It's the real deal. It's a beautiful way of living, but it's also a really serious way of living as well, because the ramifications on broader society and on the individual level are serious. So it's a real commitment. And I'm really glad that, you know, we're having this conversation now, because my hope in speaking to you is that, you know, whoever listens, whether on the land sharing side or the farming side, get a deeper understanding of what it means to embark on this, you know, this internship with you, so that it's successful. You know, the better people understand it, hopefully the right people will come along, you know, because those people who really are committed will come along. Is there anything else about this model? I don't even know, like, if I'm calling it a model, but I'm sure you have, you know, mulled over what are you giving it a name? Are you kind of calling it something? Like, how are you advertising it besides just, you know, relationships that you create online or through word of mouth?
Yeah, well, I'm of the same opinion. I'm calling it a model.
Yeah, okay.
Because I think it is. I don't know of any other thing like this. So it is a demonstration of this style, this model.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to, you know, once I get more experience with the training and the education side of it, you know, I really want to look deeper into it, because if I get an apprentice, there's no educational opportunity for them in this in producing food. You know, I would have to send them off to a TAFE to study parks and gardens, horticulture.
Mm.
So I'd love to see, you know, sort of find out how we can create an accreditation, like a, you know, for vegetable farming, small scale vegetable farming.
I could help you do that. We should talk offline, but I mean, that's kind of my wheelhouse, is in curriculum construction and understanding what guidelines need to be met so that you can be accredited and things like that. So we should talk about that, because if you're interested, I'd love to support you in this and see.
Yeah, well, it's hugely important. I mean, training the younger generations is critical.
Yeah,
and like I said, there's no education around this. If you know, I'd be sending someone off to study horticulture, where they would be learning to spray herbicides and pesticides and fungicides.
Yeah.
So that's a problem, I think. But it's also an opportunity.
Exactly. Yeah, it's an opportunity because there's a little space there to be filled. That's awesome, mate. I mean, I'm just going to call it the Hartley model or the duck foot model right now, just for the sake of giving it a label.
I'm happy with that, man. I think the duck foot farm model is a good one.
The duck foot farm model, it sounds awesome. What I'd like to do now, if you don't mind, is I'm kind of trying to be creative here, and I'm thinking about, can you see any way that this can come, this model, the duck foot farm model, the duck foot model, whatever, can be extended into like the suburbs of a city? Like, we talk about small scale, but I'm just wondering if you see there's any opportunity here for micro scale. like where we literally have backyard level, and then maybe not half or quarter acre, but smaller than that. Like, do you feel like it translates at any size?
Well, absolutely, because the method that I'm using can be done on an acre, or it can be done on, you know, 5 square meters or less.
Right. Yeah.
So it can be done anywhere, and I think having it in cities on it's the same deal, you know, underutilized land or land just sitting there not being used.
Yeah.
Why not grow food on it? And this method is, like we've been saying, is really intensive. You can grow a lot in a small area. So
yeah,
the Duckfoot farm can be replicated on any scale, really. So yeah, absolutely.
That's great. That excites me.
Yeah, I think everyone should be doing it. Whether
yeah.
I know places that have done a similar thing. You know, just built up on concrete. You know, obviously a raised bed. If your backyard's concrete, just build it up.
Yeah,
with soil and compost, and
choose shallow rooting crops, and off to the races, really, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that excites me because you know, I'm in a similar boat to people who can't afford large swaths of land, and I'm very fortunate that I can support a very small piece of land. And the idea that someone like me in the city could be, you know, a part of this, or just, you know, approaching it regeneratively like you are, is incredibly exciting. And I love that you share that with us here today, because people need to know that, you know, it can be scaled right down to a square foot. And maybe that'll help you attract more people who maybe at the beginning of this conversation didn't think they were even going to have a chance. Like for me, I find it one of my constraints is actually coming to you. Like if I could, I would be there tomorrow, but I can't. I've got family constraints, and you know, these are real constraints I need to consider. So that's cool to hear that it can be done on a small scale, and you know.
Yeah, well, you know, if there's anyone in the city that wants to come down, I do have a website that has been launched, but it's not fully complete yet. So it's just duckfootfarm.com. I will be adding a tab on there for farm tours and workshops. I've got a subscription thing at the moment, so whenever it does happen, I can email people. But you know, even people in the city, if they come down and saw the method that I'm using, it can be done in their little backyards in the city. So it does resonate to everyone, really.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah. Well. That's awesome, dude. So apart from your website and obviously your Instagram at Duckfoot Farm, where else can people find you? Are those the best ways to contact you or to see what you're doing?
Yeah, pretty much. That's about it at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, obviously my produce is in the Ubi boxes sometimes. At the moment, because it's only half an acre, I'm not sending much produce up. No, I'm not going to be sending up any produce this week, and not much for the rest of this season, but you know, like I said, I'm expanding here, so from about October, I'll start having more produce in the Ubi boxes. So anyone in the city, can jump onto the Ubi system and support farmers like me.
Yeah, and we're all looking forward to your produce appearing in the Ubi boxes come September. All right, mate. Well. Thank you so much for having a chat with me today. And I really hope, like I said earlier, that this conversation, you know, just reaches the ears of some people, even if it's one or two who want to partake in the Duckfoot model, because the Duckfoot model makes perfect sense to me, you know, so.
Oh, well, thank you, Sam. I mean, there's people like you that are connecting, you know, consumers to their farmers. So it's, you know, what you're doing is important. I thank you for that.
Yeah, well, I'm going to keep doing it because it's all important, and we need more of it. So thanks for coming on today.
Oh, cool, man. Thanks, Sam. Cheers, man.
No worries, mate. Let's speak soon.
All right. See you, mate. Bye.